You know, we are so lucky to have one of the most knowledgeable historians as a regular podcaster. He was our anchor podcaster when I came aboard in last January. Rui Farias, the executive director of St. Petersburg Museum of History. Welcome, Rui.
Hi, how are we doing today?
It's
a special day, right?
It is pretty special when you're in the studio.
Oh, come on now. For all of us here, I'm so happy to be a part of Radio St. Pete.
2 years, really, that you've been doing this, right?
Absolutely. It's been a blast.
Well, you have a really special event coming up, speaking about the history of St. Pete in February this year.
We do. We're holding a major fundraiser, actually, at the Vinoy, the beautiful Vinoy Resort, on February 21st. It's called the Sunshine City Soiree. We're actually doing celebrating the city's birthday. This could be the city's 134th birthday. And on top of that, we're going to celebrate our city by presenting some civic awards that are long overdue. Two special ones. One will go to a person who dedicated a good part of their life historically back in the day for our city, and then a more contemporary civic leader.
Well, Rui, we're going to get back to some interesting history of community radio. But before we do that, I just want to mention that, folks, we are still giving away two tickets for Radio St. Pete's Day of Giving, the Nate Najar's Jazz Holiday. If you call in and you donate $100, the first person to do that will get two tickets for the December 11th Natemas with Daniela Soledade, Nate Najar, Adrian Cunningham, and Bruce Harris at the one and only Palladium Theater. So please call now if you can, 727-899-1835, text Sunshine 967 to 535-5555. Or here's the easiest way. Go to the Radio St. Pete website in the right-hand corner, tickets and donations. Click donate, and we would really appreciate it. You'd be supporting all volunteer community radio. And tonight we have our concert, the James Taylor Tribute at Bayboro. So any way you can, please support Radio St. Pete. We'll be coming back to Rui Farias in a minute.
Our thanks to Raina G. Collins for a generous gift. She did not go for the tickets, but thanks for the contribution. To Ms. Collins, appreciate your support here at Radio St. Pete.
So, Rui, we're going to talk a little bit about what is important about community radio, and then you're going to give us a little history about WSUN after the 1 o'clock news break.
But you can do it a quick history,
okay.
And we'll... Yes, go ahead.
Well, you know, community radio has always been incredibly important here in our city, and we're so thankful for everything that you guys do here at Radio St. Pete. And radio actually started here back in, at least locally, in 1927, actually, when WSUN went on air. And it's such a weird story when you think about radio today, because WSUN, first of all, was owned by the city of St. Petersburg, the St. Pete Chamber of Commerce, and the Clearwater Chamber of Commerce. They all partnered to own this radio station. And when it went on air, it was actually two separate stations using the same transformer, WSUN and WFLA. WSUN was broadcast here in St. Petersburg from the Million Dollar Pier, and WFLA in Clearwater. Each station would operate three nights, and then they would alternate Sundays. So it was shared radio here in St. Pete. But, you know, everybody, of course, always equated, you know, WSUN with, of course, sun, right? Because that's what we're known for, the Sunshine City. But everywhere you look, when you look up WSUN, the early chamber boys came up with a slogan that, why stay up north? That's what SUN stands for.
As Craig Pittman would say, welcome to Florida, why stay up north?
That's right.
Unbelievable. Rui, why is history such an important part of our community radio station? And what is it that people should know? I mean, you could get, you know, there's so much going on at the museum. Tell us about the exhibits that are there. What's coming up?
Well, you know, radio, it's not just been entertainment, obviously, news and everything that's gone along with it. But even like looking back at WSUN again, like during its golden age, I mean, before television, I mean, that's where the people of St. Petersburg got to listen to the adventures of Ozzie and Harriet and the Green Hornet and the Lone Ranger and all those folks. So it's always played a huge part here. And at the museum, we've done our best to try to keep that type of history alive. Because when you talk to people now and you say, God, imagine life without TV. TV or live streaming or anything like that. And, you know, you had to listen to, you know, pick a show from the 80s, Miami Vice. Imagine listening to that on the radio, right? So, again, we've done our best to try and keep all that amazing radio and all the other history alive here.
You have some, you have a show up now that's really interesting, and you've got some stuff coming up. What's that?
Well, we do. We have about seven separate galleries in the museum. They all have different exhibits, and if you haven't seen the American Soldier exhibit, that now's your time to go check it out. It's going to be leaving in about a month. It is an exhibit that basically tells the story of American soldiers, not so much the battle stuff or anything like that, but the humanity behind American soldiers from the Civil War to Desert Storm. That exhibit's going to go away, like I said, in about a month in January, and we're going to open an exhibit called Wish You Were Here. It's going to be the story of tourism here in St. Petersburg.
You know, one of the things that I love about the museum, and Eugenie Bondra was just here, and we're still talking about doing postcards from the edge, taking these. Tell us about the postcard collection, because we can't wait to start reading postcards for some kind of improv thing at Happy Hour with a Historian.
Well, you know, the folks in the early 1900s, and especially in the 1920s, they got it right. They knew how to do this. I mean, postcards were one of our earliest forms of advertising. And I've been collecting St. Pete postcards my whole life. And to be honest with you, the best postcards I've ever found of St. Petersburg, I found in Philadelphia and Las Vegas. So, you know, they worked.
They were
sent
in Las Vegas?
Yes, they were sent all over the country.
What were you doing in Las Vegas?
I went to go see the Beatles Cirque du Soleil.
Wow.
It was fantastic. But, you know, these postcards, again, were early advertising, fantastic photographs. The majority of them in the early days were black and white photographs that were hand colored. So even when you see, like, for instance, we have, I mean, our collection probably numbers 40,000 different postcards.
Did you say 40,000?
Yeah, probably more than that, actually, to be honest with you. And we have one shot of the $1 million pier with sailboats in front of it. And it's the same photograph, but we have about seven different versions because whoever hand colored them colored the pier a different color every time. So, they're pretty amazing. These linen photographs are pretty amazing to look at. And we're going to open an exhibit called Wish You Were Here. It's going to be the story of tourism here in St. Petersburg.
You know, one of the things that I love about the museum, and Eugenie Bondra was just here, and we're still talking about doing postcards from the edge, taking these. Tell us about the postcard collection, because we can't wait to start reading postcards for some kind of improv thing at Happy Hour with a Historian.
Well, you know, the folks in the early 1900s, and especially in the 1920s, they got it right. They knew how to do this. I mean, postcards were one of our earliest forms of advertising. And I've been collecting St. Pete postcards my whole life. And to be honest with you, the best postcards I've ever found of St. Petersburg, I found in Philadelphia and Las Vegas. So, they worked.
In Las Vegas?
Yes, they were sent all over the country.
What were you doing in Las Vegas?
I went to go see the Beatles Cirque du Soleil.
Wow.
It was fantastic. But, you know, these postcards, again, were early advertising, fantastic photographs. The majority of them in the early days were black and white photographs that were hand colored. So even when you see, like, for instance, we have, I mean, our collection probably numbers 40,000 different postcards.
Did you say 40,000?
Yeah, probably more than that, actually, to be honest with you. And we have one shot of the $1 million pier with sailboats in front of it. And it's the same photograph, but we have about seven different versions because whoever hand colored them colored the pier a different color every time. So, they're pretty amazing. These linen photographs are pretty amazing to look at.
That is awesome. Really, what are some of the traditions? Now, you come from a wonderful background, and tell us a little bit about the traditions of your family and your culture.
Well, my family's Portuguese. My parents immigrated here to the United States in the 1950s. And so we're getting ready for, obviously we're getting ready for Christmas, the Christmas holidays. And we celebrate, our big thing is Christmas Eve, not so much Christmas Day. So I've kept the tradition alive of eating like seven different versions of codfish on Christmas Eve.
Right, the seven fishes.
Yeah,
it's an Italian thing,
but the Italians do different fish. We just do strictly codfish. So everything we do, it's either baked, it's grilled, it's codfish cakes, it's you name it. We're known for our codfish. So, yeah. So I'm looking forward to that.
That's wonderful. Do you have a favorite Christmas cookie, Rui? I know you like sweets. I always get you chocolate.
My favorite cookie, and it's only appropriate that I've spent my whole life in St. Petersburg. My favorite cookie ever has always been the Fig Newton.
Favorite Christmas movie?
Love Actually. Is that right? Is that the movie?
Yeah.
I watch every year. I don't know. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Love Actually. It's on the top 10 in the IMDb list. Favorite Christmas song?
Oh, my gosh.
Hey, listen.
You know what's really weird? Because, I mean, there's some – I mean, I love Christmas carols, the whole holiday thing. But to me, like, the strongest, the most – my favorite Christmas song is Do They Know It's Christmas?
Ooh. You know, speaking of music, we have so much holiday music coming up. And I just want to mention a couple things at the Mahaffey Theater coming up. Elmo and Friends, Say Hello, their little Christmas special. The Nutcracker Christmas Ballet, Swan Lake is coming back. Cirque du Dreams Holidays, you missed that, but it was wonderful. Charlie Brown Christmas.
I missed Charlie Brown.
You missed Charlie Brown, but you can catch it at the Central Park Performing Arts Center. And over also... from the Florida Orchestra is Frozen in Concert December 6th at the Church of the Ascension. And now back to Joe.
Well, this is Giving Tuesday. This is our fundraiser at Radio St. Pete. Please give us a call now at 727-899-1835. That's 899-1835. Text to Sunshine 967-5355. Text 53555 to Sunshine 967, or jump on our website and click on the donate button. We would love to hear from you. A little bit late for the news. Let's go to ABC in New York here on WLMX LP St. Petersburg, Radio St. Pete.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. In Russia, the meeting over the revised peace plan between Russia and Ukraine is underway, with U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner presenting the revised proposal to Russia's President Vladimir Putin. Before the meeting, Putin accused European leaders of sabotaging the plan with, quote, unacceptable changes. At the White House this hour, President Trump holding his ninth cabinet meeting since taking office. He addressed reporter questions about his recent physical.
You people are crazy. I'll let you know when there's something wrong. There will be someday. That's going to happen to all of us. But right now, I think I'm sharper than I was 25 years ago. But who the hell knows? By the way, I took my physical. I got all A's, everything.
Tennessee voters heading to the polls today in a special House election to fill the seat of outgoing GOP Representative Mark Green. That race tightening with Democrat Afton Ben, closing the gap on Republican Matt Van Epps. And on Wall Street, stocks are mixed this hour in trading. This is ABC News. In Hong Kong, two more arrests in connection with the deadly fire at an apartment complex last week. Residents are collecting personal belongings from the only building that did not catch fire. Seven of the eight apartment towers going up in flames, more than 150 people killed. It's Giving Tuesday. People are encouraged to donate to their favorite charities for the holidays, but it's also a day for swindlers. More from ABC's Elizabeth Schulze.
The Federal Trade Commission is now warning about Giving Tuesday scams, where scammers convince you to donate to a fake charity, then take your money. So before you make a donation, first confirm that the charity is legitimate. The FTC says that you can go to websites like give.org or charitywatch.org, search the name of an organization there, and check that it's accredited.
Pope Leo wrapping up his first foreign trip as pontiff, praying today at the site of the deadly 2020 port explosion in Beirut, Lebanon. 218 people were killed in the blast. The Pope also offering words of consolation to people in the war-battered southern Lebanon. Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
Here's the Tampa Bay weather. Partly to mostly cloudy as we go through the afternoon with a high of 80, a south wind at 8 to 14 miles an hour. Decreasing clouds tonight, the low 62. Mostly sunny and cooler Wednesday, the high 74. Partly cloudy Wednesday night with a low down to 56. This is Nowcast meteorologist Matthew Harding for Sunshine 96.7 FM, Radio St. Pete.
And Matthew is right on it, 79 degrees, partly cloudy skies in downtown St. Pete.
Well, folks, I'm here with Rui Farias. He is our Monday podcaster, Historically St. Pete. You know him from the St. Petersburg Museum of History, the executive director. Rui, you know, the museum has so much going on. And what I love to do is I love to have lunch at Perry's next door and then take the grandkids over. What would my grandkids, they're baseball lovers, what would they love at the museum?
Oh, definitely the baseball exhibit. Schrader's Little Cooperstown is the world's largest collection of autographed baseballs. And you're not just looking at, you know, 5,000 baseballs, which there are 5,000 baseballs. But there's all kinds of cool exhibits inside that gallery talking about the history of baseball and America that parallels baseball history.
You know, I don't know if you know this, Rudy, but fruits were the first ornaments. 17th century, people used apples, pears, and oranges to decorate Christmas trees. The edible ornaments, so popular, people called them sugar trees. Let me tell you what my dad, who was a friend of Orestes, Mr. Yankee, being Jewish, we never had a Christmas tree, but we got one and put it there, and we decorate it with baseballs.
Really?
Baseballs and baseball cards. I don't think there is a better way. I think you should put a Christmas tree up the St. Pete Museum of History.
I'm going to steal that idea right now.
Right
absolutely.
Now, right? Yeah. Absolutely. Baseball cards, baseballs. What's your favorite thing in that exhibit, which I, to this day, always remember going to with my dad?
The baseball exhibit?
Yeah.
There's two autographed balls that I always point out when we do tours. And you know, there's most people ooh and ah, of course, at the Babe Ruth balls or the Joe DiMaggio balls. And, you know, people always ask us which is the most valuable ball in the collection. And really, that answer is the ball signed by Joe DiMaggio and Marilyn Monroe at the same time. My favorite part of that exhibit is going to be the Women's League. We talk about the Women's Professional League.
Wow.
And we have a ball that is signed by Fidel Castro. And people always look at me kind of weird when I say that it's the favorite ball, my favorite ball in the collection, because of the story behind it. Because Fidel had an opportunity to play professional baseball, and he turned it down to go back to Cuba to start that revolution. So I always wonder how the world would have been different had he signed that contract.
Peace on earth. Peace on earth.
Yeah.
You know, I there's a ball that I love. So I wanted to just share a little trivia. Astronauts broadcast the jingle bells from space. Did you know that?
Nine days
before Christmas in 1965, Wally Schirra and Tom Stafford aboard Gemini 6 told Mission Control they saw an unidentified flying object, and they interrupted the broadcast with jingle bells. You have a ball that went to space. Tell us about that.
So, well, we have a ball that have that type of history behind it. We have a ball signed by Neil Armstrong. That, of course, is another one of my favorites because I love the whole Neil Armstrong story. But then we have another ball, actually, that is signed by Amelia Earhart. That is just phenomenal, and people just ooh and ah whenever they see it. Now, we do have something that ended up going up in the very last space shuttle. Nicole Stott, who is a local resident of St. Petersburg and also a NASA astronaut, she was in the last space shuttle that went up, and we have the original pennant that flew on the Benoit airboat in the original 1914 world's first ever commercial airline flight. So she asked if she could take it with her, and she took it up into space and brought it back.
That is terrific. Yeah. Rui Farias, Executive Director of St. Petersburg Museum of History. Catch his St. Pete snapshots and his Monday Historically St. Pete, and soon to come, the book of Rui's Historically St. Pete. And he's just looking that's happening.
Now more work she's giving me.
No work. Folks, thanks for joining us, Rui. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. And listen, everyone, make sure that, you know, today is Giving Tuesday, so make sure you reach out and give to Radio St. Pete.
Thank you, Rui, for being on air with us.